Well, good afternoon. Glad to be back here with you again and enjoy everything about the meeting so far. If I fail to mention it at the end, again, thank you. This was a humbling experience to come over, and I appreciate the chance. And hopefully we'll go over our lesson this afternoon that I was planning on giving you this morning. Lord, teach us to pray. This will be a quick review because most of you have seen these first few slides. A prayer to learn to pray. Luke 11:1, it came to pass as he was praying in a certain place. When he ceased, one of his disciples said unto him, Lord, teach us to pray. We know that was a legitimate request. This was not just to get the wording right, but so they could receive the reward of godly praying. Our mountain can be moved if, all the way down to the bottom, if we have the faith that only comes about by prayer and fasting. Our mountains could be our profession, our possessions, our pedigree, our life on the easy street, our own worship, worship of ourselves, or invisible to us, cloaked by Satan. We don't see ourselves as God sees us and as other people see us. Why do we need to move these mountains? These mountains may be blocking our vision of God's mountain, may be blocking our progress towards God's mountain, may be blocking our vision of ourselves. Okay, now those are introductory because we've been talking about the same theme for, this is the fourth time. So here we get to our specific title of the afternoon. Lord, teach us to pray, to prepare our hearts to move our mountain. Now what we spoke of last night, we focused on the praying and the fasting part. Praying and the fasting. Now we want to talk about, okay, we prayed. Okay, we fasted. Now what? Now we want to prepare our heart for the work. What is the heart? Here's our three questions that we want to go through our lesson with. What is the heart? Why must the heart be prepared? And how do I get started? So let's first ask the question, what is the heart? And for the purposes of what I want to discuss with you this afternoon, the heart gives life to life. Yeah, we've got a heart inside us that's beating and we live it and we're walking around. But there needs to be a little more to it. What do we do with our motivation, our enthusiasm? For our purpose, the heart means our emotions. It means our brain power. It means our will, our enthusiasm, our determination, our inspiration. We can come to church at the appointed place, at the appointed time. We can come in and sit on the bench. We can even open the song book and we can sing. But we can easily then leave and go to wherever we go all the other hours in the week and not be motivated by the lesson, not be motivated by the assembly, not be motivated to follow God's will during the week. Our body has gone through the motions, but our heart hasn't. So when I speak of the heart this morning, I mean all these things, emotions, brain power, our will, our enthusiasm, our determination, our inspiration. What is it that puts the spark in our step? What puts the sparkle in our eye? What is it that motivates us? The heart inspires to action. We are familiar with expressions like, take heart, or I've lost the heart, or I don't have the heart to do this, or whatever. Be of good cheer. So-and-so was the heart and soul of the team. So we understand those. It means what gives us inspiration, what gives us motivation, what pushes us to do what we do. We also see the expression, a cheerful giver, someone that puts his heart into what he does. We look back at Ezra's time, and I love this statement that is written about Ezra. Ezra knew how to prepare his heart, and this is part of where the title of the lesson came from. In Ezra 7 and 10, it says, Ezra had prepared his heart to do three things, to seek the law of the Lord, and to do it, and to teach in Israel statutes and judgments. Now these three things are a lesson by themselves. To seek it, And once you find it, to do it. And then once you do it, you want to teach it to other people. That's about as high as you can get. It's when you embrace an idea enough to understand it, enough to want to teach it to other people. But I want you to notice that the other wonderful part of this verse. Ezra had prepared his heart. Who prepared Ezra's heart? Did God do it? Did God snap his fingers? Ezra did it. Well, why did Ezra do it? I don't know. Why are you following God? And how strong are you following God? Have you prepared your heart? Are you waiting on God to do it? Or something else? What I'm trying to get across is we all have the power to do just like Ezra did. We have the power, we have the obligation to prepare our heart so that we can follow God as He deserves. Well, let's just look at a few ideas here. The heart needs a worthy goal. A worthy goal. We don't want to spin our wheels. We want to be doing something important. And that's good. Nothing more important than serving the Lord. Hebrews 11:6 says, without faith is it impossible to please Him. For he that comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. Okay, so we believe. But we also believe that He is going to reward us for something that's going to come later. We diligently seek Him, and then we're going to get our reward. Could that be part of preparing the heart? Setting the goal for our heart to follow. That we have a reward coming later. Many people, and I'll confess to you, even some Christians that I know, seem to be caught up in this world. And the happiness, the sorrow, the contentment, or whatever it is in this world, and don't seem to really look beyond this world. But we've got a reward somewhere. He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. We've got a reward to look forward to prepare our heart for that reward. Peter speaks of it very well when he speaks of that we look toward Jesus and we rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory. And Peter speaks often of the grace that will come at the appearing of Jesus Christ. And the resurrection of Jesus, when we're resurrected, and all those kinds of things. The heart needs strength to reach its goal. Hebrews 4:16 says, let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Now, this word grace is a strange word. It would be hard to make just one definition fit. Just one thing. Say grace is just one thing. Because you see it in so many places in the Bible in different things. Here it sounds like strength. It sounds like something you're going to get that's going to help you in a time of need. We think sometimes that grace is like forgiveness. Grace is unmerited favor. It's all of these things. It's sort of like a universal term for whatever power God can give you and help you with. But the heart needs this strength of grace to reach its goal. The path to the goal must avoid these mountains. We've spoken of these. Proverbs 6, verses 16-19. Simply must avoid these seven things. These six things does the Lord hate. Yes, seven are an abomination unto Him. A proud look. A lying tongue. Hands that shed innocent blood. A heart that devises wicked imaginations. Feet that be swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaks lies, and he that sows discord among brethren. The series of lessons that I'm working on right now, I've got the fourth lesson into humility. Of all things, just plain old humility. And I'm not meaning to say it funny, but it has humbled me. This lesson on humility. All the Bible says about humility. What is the first thing on the list of what God hates? A proud look. I believe that humility and pride are opposites. If you're going to be humble as God wants us to be, we've got to lay down pride. Every bit of the pride that we have. This is one of the seven things that God hates. So if our heart is going to be in line with what God wants it to be, we've got to avoid these things. We've got to lay down our pride so that we can pick up humility. What is one way to avoid these mountains? As I mentioned to you this in the lesson this morning, here's the statement you're saying. You must be ready and willing to leave everything behind in 30 seconds. If you sense that you are about to be caught, that was a movie criminal's motto. We've got to recognize that there's some things we cannot let our minds dwell upon. The first time may take a while. The first time, because it's strong, these feelings that we have for certain things that give us pleasure. And as we mentioned the other night, I think Friday night, we tried to make the point that people are made to feel good by certain things that are repulsive to other people. But it's because of the good feelings they get from it, they're willing to drink something that burns their throat. Because they've been made to feel good so many times after they drink enough of it. Where you and I would be repulsed to drink some of the stuff that people drink. But they do it because in the past it's made them feel good. And that good feeling is enough to push them over the edge so that they'll continue to drink this stuff. And there's many other things we can get into. Okay, so the first time it might take a while to walk away. But over a period of time, when people realize that it's worth it to walk away, it's worth it to be free. You know, the Bible says, you shall know the truth and the truth shall make you free. Once you taste that freedom, being free of all these things of the world that wants to pull you down, with all of its anxieties that goes with it. For instance, we mentioned the person that drank. Okay? That's an anxiety-filled life. Because they're either drinking to forget something or drinking to get a feeling, and then if they do sober up, they're waiting to see how they can get the next drink. That is an anxiety-filled life. It is an anxiety-filled life for a person that operates with anger as their controlling power. Or whatever it is, that's an anxiety-filled life. And when a person can avoid these things and realize how much more pleasant it is to be a Christian, it should be almost instantaneous. As soon as we recognize junk, we should walk away from junk. Let it go without a second thought. The path must go the way of a child if our heart would be prepared to follow God. Matthew 18, 3 through 4, verily I say unto you, except you be converted and become as little children, you shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And I've got some great grandkid stories to tell you, but I don't have time. That's another lesson. But you watch kids and you watch grandkids and you watch them play and you realize exactly why Jesus used this example. But what I want you to notice here, just like when Ezra prepared his heart, who prepared Ezra's heart? Ezra did. Who's going to humble you and I? Well, I said y'all humble me by asking me over here. Okay, but I'm the one that's got to do it. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself. Shall humble himself. And that's hard to do, to put down that pride. But it's worth it. It's worth it. And that prepares the heart to follow the Lord. Just a little example, a little story right here. I like this one the first time I read it. I knew I had to incorporate it somewhere in the lesson. One evening, an old Cherokee told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside people. He said, my son, the battle is between two wolves inside us all. One is evil. It is anger, envy, jealousy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. That's the bad wolf. Here's the good wolf. The other one is good. It is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. Okay, the grandson is a thinking young man, and he thinks for a minute, and he asks the grandfather, which wolf wins? The old Cherokee simply replied, four words. What did he say? The one you feed. That's the one that wins. That wolf's in you and that wolf's in me. We were born with them. But we have a choice as to which one we die with. It's our choice. We decide to prepare our heart. We decide to humble ourselves. We decide whether our life is going to be controlled by all those anxiety-filled things on the previous screen, or we're going to fill our lives with the good things. The one you feed, prepare our heart. The heart must follow wise counsel. Okay, so now hopefully we've got the point across that we've got something to do. So where do we look for instructions? What do we follow? All of us are smarter than any one of us, if you look at the bottom of the bulletin. This is a saying that I work with a group of people that meet, several different organizations meet together, and this was a common saying of one of them. And he always said, the first time I heard it, I didn't think much about it, but it almost every time we get together to do something, he'd say the same thing. I want all your ideas, because all of us are smarter than any one of us. So look for some help from others around us. We simply cannot do any better than we know to do. If we think we can, then we apparently think that we can accidentally do better. And you remember what we said about accidents this morning? We're not accidentally going to do better. We're not accidentally going to get into heaven. We're not accidentally going to serve the Lord as He deserves. You may accidentally win the lottery, but you will never accidentally win heaven. We must seek counsel from those who have proven by their actions that they are wise. Proverbs 12:15, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkens unto counsel is wise. Hearkens unto wise counsel. Follow someone who has been successful. Proverbs 19:20-21. Hear counsel and receive instruction, that you may be wise in your latter end. There are many devices in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the counsel of the Lord, that shall stand. There's many devices in a man's heart. Watched a TV show just a couple of nights ago while we was watching supper. And you've probably seen this series. I've never seen it before, but it was like people that supposedly could do superhuman things. And you may have seen this. This guy was a savant, had this mental problem. And in describing what happened to him, they said that a normal person's mind would function on 100 different things and keep up with 100 different things. But a savant had a quirk in his brain that he couldn't do that. He focused on one. All of his brain power was focused on one thing. And this young man focused his on playing the piano. At the age of 3, he sat down and could just start playing almost anything that he could hear. And I think he was blind. So this was complete from his ear to his hands and his brain, completely focused. Now, he could hardly walk without somebody being on either side of him. When they asked him a question, instead of saying yes, he'd just kind of say, something like that. You know, he had that kind of problem. But he had the ability, and I'm not telling you this to make fun of him. I'm getting around to the point of what we can do if we put our minds to it. He had the ability that whenever he'd hear a song, he'd never forget it, and he could play it back. Thousands and thousands of songs if he heard it one time. So they put him to a test. They took him to a studio, And they got a jazz pianist, and jazz is one of the hardest going all over the place kind of playing style. A jazz pianist made up a song. Made up a song. Play it for this person. And then the piano was hooked up to a computer that would register each keystroke. And then this person, this savant, he was going to sit down and see if he could play that piece back. And so he heard it one time, immediately sat down at the piano. He didn't hit every note, but he hit 95% of them. He hit 95% of the notes, just hearing it. No music, couldn't see, just hearing it. And then they took him to another studio where they had other music scholars, and they would call out songs to see if he could play them. He not only played the song, but he asked, "What style do you want me to play it in?" And if a particular artist had put his own twist on that song, he played it that way. It was incredible to listen. Fingers flying over the keyboard. All right. The mind. We have so much capacity in our mind that we're letting be spread out in 100 different ways. That if we could focus, it on a few things, we could be great and impressive in a few things rather than be so spread out. And of course, you know where I'm coming from. What better thing to focus on, what more worthy goal to focus on than preparing the heart to follow the Lord? Is there one any better that you would put above that? Proverbs 24, 5 and 6, a wise man is strong. Yes, a man of knowledge increases strength. For by the wise counsel you shall make war, and in multitude of counselors there is safety. But we must be careful. We must pick our counselors well. Be wary of the counsel of your worldly peers, 2 Corinthians 10 and 2. We dare not make ourselves of the number, or compare ourselves with some that commend themselves, but they measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves are not wise. Always let the Bible be your guide, be your comparison, be your measuring stick. Not someone that's real impressive, but the person that can follow the Bible and you can see the Scriptures in their lives. Those are the people that are worth being our counselors and our mentors. Why would we be wary of the counsel of our worldly peers? Well, our worldly peers now, not church peers, but our worldly peers, usually they've had the wrong kind of experience. They know a lot, but it's in the wrong things. They haven't had enough of it. They haven't had enough heartbreak or despair or whatever. They're still enjoying driving fast without realizing the consequences of what happens if I don't take that curve. They haven't had enough of the problems of life. If they had, they would know that sin does not satisfy. Sin does not satisfy. And how do we know it doesn't satisfy? A few months ago, a fellow was picked up for child pornography, I think. He checked his computer, and he had 60,000, at least this is what was reported, he had 60,000 pornographic images on his computer. So let me ask you a question. If sin satisfies, if pornography satisfies, why would you need 60,000 pictures? I'm just asking you a logical question, whether you like porn or not. And I know you don't, but there's people that do. But if sin satisfies, why would you need 60,000 pictures of it? It's because sin doesn't satisfy. There's always got to be more. It's always got to be refreshed. It's always got to be looked at differently. It's always something, a new angle or a new twist. The devil's good at it. He's good at it. We've got to be aware and realize that sin does not satisfy. We've got to be wary of the counsel of our same age peers. Now this is the long, little long passage, but we'll read it quickly. 1 Corinthians 12, 4 through 9. Your father made our yoke grievous. This was Solomon. This was Solomon's son, Jeroboam and Rehoboam. Your father made our yoke grievous. Now therefore make the grievous service of your father and his heavy yoke which he put upon us lighter, and we will serve you. Depart yet for 3 days, the king said. Depart for 3 days, then come again to me. And then he consulted with the old man that stood before Solomon his father while he yet lived and said, how do you advise that I may answer this people? And they said, if you will be a servant unto this people this day and will serve them and answer them and speak good words to them, then they will be your servants forever. But the king forsook the counsel of the old man and consulted with the young men that were grown up with him, which stood before him. And he said, what counsel give you that we may answer this people who have spoken to me, saying, make this yoke which your father did put upon us lighter? And the same age peers said, thus shall you say unto them, my little finger shall be thicker than my father's loins. And now, whereas my father did lay you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father has chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. So Jeroboam and all the people came the third day, and the king Rehoboam answered the people roughly, and forsook the old man's counsel that they gave them him, and spoke to them after the counsel of the young men, saying, my father made your yoke heavy, and I will add to your yoke. My father also chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. Wherefore the king hearkened not unto the people. And Jeroboam and all his men said, what portion have we in David? So Israel rebelled against the house of David unto this day. Same thing happens today. People don't ask advice of the ones that could help them. They ask advice of the ones they think will tell them what they want to hear. So if we're going to prepare our hearts and be wise, we must make a decision. Who am I going to listen to? Who's going to counsel me? Be aware of the wisdom in the years. Time is the best teacher. Unfortunately, it kills all of its students. Isn't it a shame that about the time we learn how to get along in life, we die? Or we get old and we get ineffective. Or we get so old that people don't want to listen to us like they think we're out of it. But the longer we live, if we keep our eyes open, we'll see things and we'll observe things that will show us how true the Bible is and how we should follow it. Ecclesiastes 12:8-14, vanity of vanities, said the preacher. All is vanity. And moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yes, he gave good heed and sought out and set in order many proverbs. The words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies. Now, this phrase supposedly is like our expression, you can hang your hat on it. Somebody says something that's wise and it's true, then you can say, it's like a nail driven in a wall. You can hang your hat on that because that's true, whatever that is. And so he says it here. The words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. And further by these, my son, be admonished of making many books. There is no end. And much study is a weariness of the flesh. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. Peter continues the thought of the New Testament when he said that if we call on the Father who, without respect of persons, judges according to every man's work. So it hasn't changed. What Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes is still true, and it's still true today. We'll be judged according to our works. Be aware of the wisdom in the Bible. These are two well-worn scriptures, 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17. All scriptures given by inspiration of God, and is profitable for doctrine, reproof, correction, instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be perfect, thoroughly furnished unto all good works. And the previous chapter, 2 Timothy 2 and 15, study to show yourself approved unto God, a workman that needs not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. So here's the idea that I planted the seed this morning. Practice the M&Ms daily to get the wisdom in the Bible into your heart. And the M&Ms are memorizations and meditations. Now, I want you to think of this. If normal people spread out their brain power into 100 different things, and yet if it could be focused into one narrow thing, we could keep thousands of songs and sequences of keystrokes in our memory. If the brain is that powerful, then think of how many things we can keep in our brain that we memorize. But it's not just to memorize. It's not just that. What was the advice to Timothy? Exhorting to read and then to meditate on these things. What is the meditation part? The meditation, to me, is the true heart preparation part. That's where we take something that we read in the book out of black and white and we make it in technicolor, in 3D. And we animate it. And it applies to us. It guides our steps. That's the difference. To memorize for the sake of memorizing. We could all memorize the 23rd Psalm. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And we could get to where we could say that in about 10 seconds. But you know what? If you go back and take that passage phrase by phrase, it is an awesome passage. The Lord is my shepherd. Okay, that implies we're like sheep. It also implies that as a shepherd would do anything to protect the sheep. The shepherd looks out for everything about the sheep, from disease to food to clear water to fighting the wolves off the sheep to doing everything for the sheep. So when we say the Lord is my shepherd, just that one phrase, if you meditate on that, that's a whole lesson. Now, the other thing that's good about memorizing and meditating is it keeps junk out. It keeps these other 99 things out that we don't need to fool with. If you're going to pay at Walmart and you're walking down the aisle, you've got all the magazines on either side, you see all kind of junk on those magazines. Okay? You got all these things coming in. If you don't have the blinders on, if you don't have the filters on, if you don't have something to protect your heart, you can have all this clutter coming in that takes up time. Takes up time. But if you've got these verses memorized, you meditate on these things, there's no such thing as wasted time. If you're waiting in line at Walmart, you can be going over the scriptures in your head. If you're paying at a gas pump, you're not wasting time. You're sitting there making use of your time. There was a man that was well known for using his brain, Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein had an appointment with a man at a certain place at a certain time. And this man that was going to meet Albert Einstein was late. And when he got there, he began to apologize. I'm sorry I'm late. I'm sorry I wasted your time. Albert Einstein, according to the story now, Albert Einstein says, don't worry. He said, the kind of work that I do, I can do it right here, waiting on you, just as easy as I can in my classroom or wherever it was he studied. Because his mind was mental. His work was mental with his mind, his thinking. And so while he was waiting on that man, he was doing his work. He was thinking. Now, if he's got that kind of attitude about simply doing work and doing research, then what do you think about us? What's the Lord looking at us when he sees our, I've heard it described this way, and it kind of stuck in my mind, our marginal minutes. Went to kind of an inspirational type retreat one time when I was in school. And this is one thing that the man spoke of there, and it stuck with me the rest of my life, was marginal minutes. It's not so much the hours that we spend doing something. but it's the 5, 10, 15 minutes that we have. Do we occupy ourselves? Do we find something to occupy our minds with junk? Or can we use those 5, 10, 15 marginal minutes in between things to better ourselves or to learn something? Over the years, I've tried a bunch of different ways to keep the scriptures close to me. I've had these little pocket recorders. I first started out with one that would hold less than 3 minutes, and then they got up to where they'd hold a long time. Now I've got one. I've got this phone right here, and y'all have got these things too. These things are available. Got this phone, got the whole Bible on the thing. Read it, listen to it, whatever I want to do. But you know what I've come back to? More than anything else, it's as simple as dirt. It's just paper. Just paper. This one happens to be the one I'm working on right now. It's 1 Peter, the first chapter. And you can mark it up. You can do all kinds of things. You know what's neat about this thing? I'm going to show you how my mind works. If you fold it in 4 pieces right here, whichever section is giving you trouble and you're trying to get it right, when you're fixing your breakfast and washing dishes in the morning, I happen to have a Venetian blind right over the sink, I can fold this thing up and stick it in that Venetian blind. And it's right there in front of me. So I don't waste time washing dishes. I try not to waste time doing anything, because as old as I am, time is precious. Time is precious. I've wasted plenty of it. I know. I've wasted time that I'll never get back. And I'm trying to take advantage now of just plain old paper. Keep the scriptures around you. Memorize and meditate. I can't tell you anything better that will prepare your heart. Just having these things in your mind, what you'll start thinking is when you do get in a position to waste time, you'll start thinking, I don't need to do this. I got something better to do. I'm going to think about this. See, you're controlling your mind. And you keep your heart motivated doing that. A prayer to learn to pray. It all got started for this series was what was asked of Jesus in Luke 11 and 1. It came to pass as he was praying in a certain place, when he ceased, one of his disciples said unto him, Lord, teach us to pray. So every moment, Satan tries to confuse us, remove the focus from our heart, so we will think his mountains are as good as the mountain of God. So every moment, who will we be like? Those who pray with essentially no goal, or those who pray, prepare, and progress towards God's goal and receive God's blessings every day? That's what I want you to be like. Those that progress toward God's blessings. So here's our title. Lord, teach us to pray to prepare our hearts to move the mountain. First question was, what is the heart? Well, your answer would be as good as mine. I mean, this is not scriptures. This is just observation. What do you think? I said that it was our inner source of inspiration. What motivates us? What makes us do what we do? And we do it like we want to do it. Now, I know that we've got things we do every day that we don't necessarily want to do, but we do it because we're responsible people and we're supposed to. But surely, even out of a life of filled with obligations, there can be some things that we want to do, that we just have a burning desire to do. And hopefully, serving the Lord is going to be one of them. Why must the heart be prepared? Unfortunately, it does not come pre-programmed, and there are no defaults. It's all up to us. If Ezra had not prepared his heart, Ezra would have been like any of the other millions of people that lived and died way back then, and we would have known nothing about it. Not one thing. The only reason we know about Ezra is because Ezra prepared his heart. Jesus said, if you're going to get into heaven, you must humble yourself. Humility doesn't come in packages. You know, it's not like Mike Daniels and all his family. They're going to be humble because they're his family. It doesn't work that way. Each person has his own humility. as the scripture says, clothed in humility. As Peter said, we're clothed in humility. And clothes don't come on a whole building. Clothes are for an individual. And so I think that phrase he used is beautiful. Be clothed with humility. Each person puts on their humble clothes. How do I get started? First thing you got to do, it's like anything else. You just got to decide where you want to go. Where do you really want to go? Where do you want to be in 5 years or 10 years? What kind of person do you want to be in the Lord? Do you want to be a spiritual giant? Or do you want to be... Well, we want to be saved, that's for sure. But what kind of person do we want to be? Do we want to show the Lord that we can be? We all have the potential. This is the scary part. We have the potential to be a spiritual giant. We all have that potential. Are we going to prepare ourselves to be that? Here's our lesson. Here's our series. I hope it was enjoyable to you. I learned a lot from this series. Always remember, though, that it's about prayer. Prayer, through fasting and prayer, we have the strength to move these mountains in our life. And I hope that you all are convinced to prepare to move forward to the mountain of God's house.